Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we talk with Kyle Van Wyk. Kyle is a performance coach and a health and human performance instructor at Dort University in Iowa in the U.S. Kyle recently took a group of students to Scotland to explore sport and sport culture while paying close attention to the intersection of religion and sport. We can't wait to talk to Kyle about this experience, so let's get started.
Well, we're so excited to have Kyle Van Wyk with us today. Kyle, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me on and giving me the invite to do this podcast with you guys. You know, for me, I've always had kind of a natural interest in sport. Like, my parents never like pushed me in this direction. It was just something I naturally flowed to and just found, had an interest in. So it's kind of been, I feel like, a part of my life ever since I can remember. From more of a fan perspective, I've been a University of Iowa Hawkeye fan ever since I can remember. I grew up about an hour from Iowa City in the Pella, Iowa area. My grandparents had WGN on cable, so I then kind of latched onto some of the Chicago teams, like the Cubs and then the Blackhawks. I became a Liverpool FC fan in college. My brother studied abroad in Wales, and they did a group trip to the city of Liverpool, and he brought me back a shirt. So then I just kind of decided this is going to be my team. And now you can watch all that stuff, like the Premier League and Champions League and stuff like that. And I follow pretty closely to like international competitions. So this summer is perfect because you have the Euros, you have Copa America. Later on, you have the Olympics coming up. So anything that involving the USA teams or with me having Dutch heritage, I follow the Dutch teams quite closely as well. But I played most major sports growing up, football, basketball, baseball, golf. One sport I wish I would have had the chance to play, but we just didn't have the structure for it was hockey. Like, I love NHL hockey. And here in Sioux Center, we actually have an indoor ice rink with like a youth program. So I think I would have loved that if I would have had the chance. I played football in college. And then currently I serve as an instructor in our health and human performance department at Dort University, where I teach courses in like exercise physiology, biomechanics, assessment, strength and conditioning. And then I also serve some of our sport teams as like a strength and conditioning coach. So kind of, yeah, tied to sport still in a way, even though I'm not a direct like team coach. But I still like being involved in aspects that surround athletics. And over the years, I've just developed a really big interest in the role that sport plays in society and culture. So that's kind of, I think, what I'm joining you guys about to talk about, a class I've formed here at Dort.
Yeah, we'll talk much more about that as we go along in this episode. But super excited to hear your robust sport background. It mimics ours. And I would say, you know, yeah, if you're not a sport team coach, being a performance coach has always intrigued me because you're working with so many different teams. And for those of us that love sport broadly, that just seems like kind of an ideal position. Nevertheless, tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Yeah, so I grew up in the Pella area. So people tend to know where Pella, Iowa is, but you might not know the surrounding towns of like Linville or Sully or so. So I actually grew up more like closer to those smaller towns, but I kind of just say the Pella, Iowa area. Graduated from Pella Christian High School and then went on to attend Dort University for my undergrad. And now I live in the Northwest Iowa area, living in Sioux Center, where now I work at Dort, a Christian university in Northwest Iowa. And currently entering my third year as a first-term deacon at my church in Orange City, attending First Reformed Church in Orange City, Iowa. And then me and my wife, we also have been serving as youth leaders in the high school setting at our church for the past 3 years.
Yeah, so an Iowa kid, stayed in Iowa, but you have this sort of interest in international sport, which we want to get to. But I wondered, we've heard a little bit about your sport background and your faith background. Is there something about Kyle that would help our listeners get to know you a little bit? Some hobby, some activity, something unusual maybe?
Yeah. I guess my go-to that I kind of always throw out there is that one unique thing. I'm going to kind of break the rules. I'm going to share maybe two here. But my go-to that I always share is I'm a triplet. So I have a brother and a sister that were triplet siblings. We also have an older brother that's 4 years older than us. So, and we all three or all four of us went to different universities. So our oldest brother went to Trinity Christian College out in the Chicago area. I attended Dort. My sister attended Northwestern College in Orange City. And my triplet brother attended Central College in Pella. So just kind of that's one unique thing. That's kind of my go-to. But another thing that's maybe more recent and I guess does have relevancy to kind of maybe our conversation is within the past 2 years, I've had one-on-one conversations with Alistair Begg. I don't know if you know of who Alistair Begg is. He's a preacher in the Cleveland area. He has a Truth for Life ministry, and he's originally from Glasgow, Scotland. So that kind of is kind of how I got connected with him. And me and my wife, our first book that we did for premarital counseling was written by Alistair Begg called A Lasting Love. And then in the past 6 months or so, I've also had lunch with a guy named Grant Jarvie, who's a big-time writer in the scope of sport, social issues, culture, society, all those kind of things. So more recently, I've had the chance to connect with those two guys that maybe you've heard of.
Well, yeah, that's so interesting. And some high-quality name dropping. Outstanding. I thought that was great for us to be able to get to know you a little bit and figure out a little bit about your background. But I think you're kind of you're opening the door to talk more about your international connections. And, you know, having been only 3 years at Dort, it's interesting to me that you've already pulled together a class, a group of students that you've already taken overseas. And so tell us a little bit about how that came together. And first, give us a scope of the project and then how that all came together, because I'm kind of interested how quickly that moved.
Yeah, it's been about I've been at Dort for a little bit now, but this has been about a 3 year process where so the two main reasons of motivation that kind of got me thinking about this was I have a good friend that teaches a different institution, but he's ran a course where they bring students to the Czech Republic for learning about what they call physical culture of Czechia. And then another professor here at Dort that teaches a history class. And at the end of the semester, he takes his students to Florence, Italy, and they go for like maybe a 10-day trip or something like that. So my thinking was if they were able to do that, and I have this kind of this passion to do something similar, like why can't I kind of merge the two ideas of like sport culture? It's something I have just a general interest in, and it continues to develop and grow and develop this structure of a course where we study that topic for a semester, and then we go to a place to be immersed in another place's sport culture, sport society. And so I just kind of started looking for ways to develop connections and started to eventually develop connections in Scotland. And I thought Scotland was a good choice from if we're only going to be there for a short amount of time, there's not maybe such huge culture shock that our students can easily kind of grasp what we're doing here and all that type of things. But at the same time, there's still a lot of differences between Scotland and our culture here in the USA, especially here in the Midwest. So started developing connections in Scotland and formulated a course and wrote a proposal and got it approved here at Dort. And then we developed a two-week itinerary going over to Scotland, where we were immersed in not only their sport culture, but just their society in general and learning about the importance of their history and what that means to their nation and things like that. So it's just kind of like a long process of developing the course content, planning an itinerary, establishing some sport connections, some church connections over in Scotland, and then just kind of waiting for the trip to get here, which we took just this past May, from May 12 to 26.
So you're fresh off this this first trip, this first go. I imagine it's a trip that you would consider to, you know, doing again in the future, but exciting to hear a little bit about like how your interest came about in international sport, having a brother that studied abroad in Wales, bringing back a Liverpool t-shirt for you that excites you about, you know, international soccer. You think about a place that you might be able to take students. And so you go and you do this trip. I'm curious what you learned from this first experience, taking students to Scotland for 2 weeks in May. It's a class. You're taking students from, I don't know where your students are from, but Dort University is in Iowa, is in a relatively rural part of Iowa. And you're taking them to a place that likely a lot of them hadn't been before. Maybe they did, but you're taking them to a new place. What was the experience like being there with them? What did you learn from the experience?
Yeah. I'll backtrack a little bit. I think the reason maybe I've developed such a curiosity with like global sport and sport outside of the United States is I've grown up and lived in areas that we have a strong connection to our European heritage. So living in the Pella, Iowa area has strong Dutch heritage. Living in Northwest Iowa has kind of the same thing. So I think I've always had this connection and understanding of that. And it's made me curious as to what does sport mean in other places in the world, and why do we care about all of this? You watch these international tournaments where this kind of national pride comes out, and you know we're ultimately talking about a game, but there must be a reason we care about it. And you see just the passion that people have. So I kind of wanted to expose our students to just understanding outside of the United States and even the Midwest that what sport means to people. And how it can be a part of their society, how it's a part of their culture, and how it's different from the United States. But at the same time, we can find a lot of commonality in sport. It's often something that can bind us together. It can be something that works past barriers that maybe politics can't, and other things are not able to move past those barriers. But for some reason, sport speaks a common language that can move past those barriers. So I think that can be like a really powerful thing. And I just kind of wanted to expose our students to that. And one thing that students need in order to graduate from Dort is they need to earn cross-cultural studies credits. So by doing this, they're able to earn those. And I thought, what better way to earn those than to go on a cross-cultural program and engage in a topic that, you know, a lot of people have an interest in just general sport. Maybe they're involved in youth sport growing up or competed in high school athletics or are college athletes. And it's kind of something that a lot of people have just an interest in. So let's go learn about it and experience it in a new place. So yeah, what did we learn and what do I think my students learned? Like from more of our course content building into the trip, we tried to learn about engaging with cultural differences. So we actually used a book written by David Smith and Penny Lynn Dykstra, who I believe are professors at Calvin, that they wrote a book called Christians and Cultural Difference. So just first engaging in cultural difference, even though Scotland maybe doesn't have such huge culture shock from America, there's still going to be differences there that we're going to learn about, be a part of, engage with, and let's be prepared for that. Another thing is we actually use Brian, your book, Sport, Faith, Life, on talking about sport from a Christian perspective and maybe looking at it from some avenues and ways that don't often get thought of or looked at, especially maybe from a high school student or college student perspective that, you know, I've never really thought about it that way. That's really interesting. We talked about certain issues in sport, so things from issues in youth sport to the mental health side aspect of sport. Especially we watched, with the Olympics coming up, we watched a documentary called The Weight of Gold, and just how athletes tend to tie their identity in their sport because they're so fixated on reaching this certain level, especially within the Olympics, that once that's all gone, like, who are we and what do I do with myself now? And so how do we understand sport from there and protect ourselves from that? And then maybe a more recent one that's maybe garnered a lot of attention in the last maybe 5 to 10 years is a concept called sports washing, where places have used and abused sport in certain ways to maybe scrub their image clean. And this could maybe all go all the way back to Hitler's Olympics in 1936 in Berlin. One of my favorite parts of the course is we looked at significant moments in sport that at the time, and especially looking back, these moments in sport maybe felt like more than a game. So we did look at Jesse Owens' performance at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. We looked at 1980 Olympic hockey, and I kind of did a twist on this where a lot of people know about the USA side of things, but what did it mean for the Soviet Union side of things? And what was the importance of being good at Olympic sport, especially ice hockey? What did that mean for the Soviet Union at the time? And then when this happened, that they lost to essentially an amateur college team and the Americans, what was that like in their society, and what did they think about that? And then not much long after, they had some pretty extreme political reforms, and what does that all mean? We looked at the 1995 Rugby World Cup and Nelson Mandela, and what did the Springboks mean to that nation in that time, with apartheid ending and trying to unify a country by cheering for a common team and on a common ground. And so we looked at that. And then probably the most recent, I tried to go in a timeline order. The last thing we looked at was the role of Major League Baseball and how it helped our country, gave us a distraction after the 9/11 attacks, and the role that Major League Baseball played in that time. And I would have been probably in seventh or eighth grade at the time. And I do remember that, of just sitting down, watching a baseball game, cheering for something, smiling and laughing for, you know, the first time in what felt like a while. So that was really powerful as well. And then we finished with just a comparative sport culture, and we focused primarily on the rivalry that's well known around the world. It's arguably the most intense club soccer rivalry in the world, between two clubs in Glasgow called Celtic Football Club and Rangers Football Club. And there's a lot that goes into it that a lot of Americans have no clue about. And we think of rivalry, and it usually stems in America from either shared success, so two successful teams, or close proximity, and sometimes that can be both. Like an example of two teams of shared success, but they're really not close to each other, would be like USC and Notre Dame football. There's a rivalry there, but it's really out of shared success. Another example with proximity involved is like Duke Carolina basketball. But this is a rivalry in Scotland between these two soccer clubs that for decades have had perspectives of national identity, political affiliations, religious associations, added into the proximity, added into the shared success. And when you wrap it all together, what do we make of all this? And why is the sport of what they would call football, we call soccer, why is it so important in Glasgow? And we learned that the city of Glasgow was a big shipbuilding hub. And when that that workforce went away over time, lots of people lost their jobs and things like that. So, you know, maybe Glasgow didn't have the greatest image for a couple of decades, and they really relied on the success of their football teams to have some self-confidence within their city and their fan association with, if you're a Rangers fan, if you're a Celtic fan. So we kind of looked at all these different aspects of the rivalry and understanding why is it a rivalry. And now we're going to go to this place, and we toured one of the stadiums there. But now when we go there, we understand this is why at Celtic games you see the Ireland tricolor waving in the stands. But if you go to Ibrox Stadium, 5 miles away on the west side of Glasgow, you see the Union Jack being, you know, waving in the stands by fans. And so so now we understand that. When we actually get to Scotland and the trip, I tried to have a well-rounded, balanced itinerary. For me, I'm a stadium nerd, so I could have gone to every stadium. I could have gone to Murrayfield, where they play rugby, in Hampden Park, which is the national team stadium. But maybe my students wouldn't be as enthusiastic in a stadium as a stadium. So we toured Celtic Football Club Stadium on the east side of Glasgow. We visited the University of Stirling sport program. And the Stirling is a smaller city, kind of in the middle of Scotland. And they have a really unique connection with sport in that they have a big sporting reputation because they have national training centers on their campus for triathlon, for curling, for what else? My mind's going on a blank right now. Tennis as well. And swimming. And swimming is probably their biggest one, where they'll have four athletes competing in the Paris Olympics later this summer. So we visited there. We went out to St. Andrews and walked the old course links at St. Andrews Links. That was fascinating. And probably the final thing we did as a group is we went to a Highland Games festival in a little town called Blackford, where we just kind of enjoyed the time there, watched the heavies events with the weighted tosses for distance and Highland dancing and bagpiping and all those kind of things. And oh, I should mention too, we took a cricket class. We learned the fundamentals of how to play cricket, which we found out was very different from baseball. You don't have the luxury of a glove in cricket, so your fielding technique is different. And because it's a flat bat, the batting technique, which we found out was very different as well. So we found that out the hard way too, where we looked pretty silly because you're so coordinated for a baseball swing, but that doesn't work with cricket. So that was at Stirling County Cricket Club. And so that was kind of in a nutshell the sport things we did. We did other cultural things like castle tours, cathedrals, free day activities, those kinds of things. But that in a nutshell is kind of the sport itinerary of our time over there.
Well, Kyle, you had me right from the beginning. Sign me up. That sounds really good. Let's go. Yeah. Pretty exciting. I loved it. So presumably you had students that signed up for this that had a general interest in sport. You know, they knew about sport in their own context, maybe sport in Iowa, and they were headed over to sort of, they like travel, they like sport, but the foundations that you pulled together, they were probably new concepts for them to think about, which is fun and exciting for you to be able to do that. It sounds like you prepared them and then brought them over to be able to experience some things. I'm wondering from there, you talked about comparing their own experience with what's there and how sport can be a unifier in some ways. What did the students find most familiar? Like they went over there and they said, you know, this is similar to what we experienced back in Iowa or our hometowns. And what did they say was, wow, this is totally different, or this is very unusual the way they approach sport? Does anything come to mind on those two ends?
I think, yeah, from the similar aspect, I think they just realized, like sport speaks a common language. And so how you develop your fan associations, they could identify with. Some of the sports that we looked at, primarily with football/soccer being such a big thing over there, some of them have experienced playing soccer, so they had familiarity there as well. But I think the biggest commonality from understanding on a similar side of things was just how sport speaks a common language especially from a fan perspective. So that's probably the biggest similarity. The biggest differences, though, is that the popular sports here in America, with American football and basketball, aren't as big as over there, which is obvious and makes sense. And so the fact that we did other things with club football or soccer, with cricket. Obviously, golf's kind of a global game where, we have the PGA Tour here as well. But maybe they didn't quite know the reverence of like St. Andrews. What is the significance of St. Andrews? And honestly, I kind of thought me myself. I feel like I'm more excited than the student. I'm like geeking out here. It's like, oh my goodness, we're seeing all these pretty significant places. The stadiums we saw were arguably within the scope of Europe. Were like some of the top tier atmospheric places you could see a game at. So I tried to make that come out to our students so that they kind of understood that. But just understanding especially how rivalry develops. And we found out that in Europe, not everything, but a lot of rivalry just has deeper lying things that go beyond just like two teams being close to each other. So we're going to agree to have that's a rivalry. So I think they were really interested to learn about those deeper lying things and understanding our country comes from a foundation that isn't really in the grand scope of things all that old. It's relatively young. So the history that they saw over in Scotland with it made the history became real when we were at Stirling Castle and learning about the story of William Wallace and Braveheart and England and Scotland, and some of the first international sporting events were between those two countries. And that's just kind of established a deeper lying associations that go beyond what's pretty typical of what we experience here in American sport. One thing that I kind of developed, I don't know if our students did, but I developed along the way. A lot of times I would get noticed that I'm not from Scotland. So I would get asked where I'm from and what I'm doing. And I would explain, I'm a professor at a university. I'm here leading a cross-cultural studies class. And I would get in discussions with a lot of Europeans about coming from a place like Iowa, where we don't have any professional sport teams. So our big teams are these big university teams, like the University of Iowa Hawkeyes. Chad, I know you're a Penn State Nittany Lion football fan. And I would show them pictures of like Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa football games. And they could not believe that there were 70 to 100,000 people attending a game for university students. And I would explain to them how at the highest level of the university system within America, we draw bigger crowds for university games than professional games. And really the fandom is maybe more what Europeans align with, especially from a football, soccer perspective, that they would identify with better and feel more passion and not so corporate sponsorship type of thing that maybe is a lot more common in the pro game here in America. So I had some really interesting conversations at the Stirling County Cricket Club. Our coach was a younger guy that is actually from South Africa, and his dad played for the South African national baseball team. So he was well-versed in Major League Baseball. But he was also, his parents lived in Iowa for 2 years. He didn't really say why or expand on that, but he was very familiar with the NFL and American college football. So he had an awesome time discussing the NFL, and he knew all about the Big Ten and SEC and Pac-12 and Brock Purdy and George Kittle. So you have those Iowa and Iowa State associations. And then at the hostel we stayed at, I spoke with a gentleman he was from Scotland originally, but he was working somewhere in Scandinavia in like the medical field. And he would work certain shifts that when he would take his break, for whatever reason, the place he worked at had like some American TV, so there'd be ESPN there. And he said, I remember when I watched an LSU football game, and he even knew it was called Death Valley, and it was a night game. And so he knew, so his favorite player is Joe Burrow, and he follows him a little bit. But so we talked about American college football because he knows about it a little bit, and he loves it. Like, so we connected on that as well. And so all these little places I'm having connections, and the only thing that would have connected us is somehow we got onto this conversation about sport, and I was able to share with them a perspective of in America, you know, not every place has professional teams, but we have this other thing that like a high level university sport that is quite big and quite serious, and it kind of blows their minds because they don't have a system or a setup like that. And we kind of learned about that at the University of Stirling, what their system is and what their setup is and how it differs from the American university sports system.
So it's fascinating to me that, when you take an experience like that, how much you learn cross-culturally just by sort of watching and listening, but also then having to explain to people who don't know certain things that we take for granted in American sport, right? So you talk about the college sport enterprise in general. It's just always been fascinating to me how much I learn when I have to explain what college sport is and sort of the value of college sport, especially when you think about being in a place like Iowa or, you know, the west side of Michigan, you know, there's a lot of, like Brian, a lot of Detroit sports fans in Michigan, but we're you know, 2.5 hours away from the nearest pro sports teams too. So there's something about like the culture of college sport in a number of different pockets in the U.S. And so that's really a fascinating thing for me. It sounds like you guys experienced that as well. I'm wondering if I can ask you to follow up a little bit more on what you all learned of the Celtic Rangers rivalry. So we're talking about something that has a religious element to it, right? And something that we would understand, the three of us all being a part of Christian institutions of higher education that are also connected very closely to rival institutions. Brian and mine are rivals, you know, yours are Northwestern and Iowa, that actually stem from these very sort of minuscule differences between these small American Protestant denominations. Whereas when we're talking about Celtic and Ranger, it's there's something there that's just dynamic, and so much of it comes from religion. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So with that rivalry, I think these associations have lessened a little bit in recent decades, maybe the past 20 years. But these associations go back to the late 1800s. I mean, Rangers was formed in 1872. Celtic was formed in 1888. The main reason that there's kind of a division of British, Scottish, and Irish heritage is the country of Ireland had a potato famine in the mid to late 1800s, so a lot of people left there, and Glasgow, Scotland was nearby. It was relatively easy to get to. There was known shipbuilding there, so there were jobs available, and so there was this influx of Irish Catholic families into the west side of Scotland, which is where Glasgow is, and then they settled on the east side of Glasgow. So this was also at the same time the sport of football or soccer was becoming popular from England up north into Scotland. And so people started playing. And Celtic Football Club formed out of the east side by an Irish Catholic priest who wanted to do something to give their neighborhoods some self-confidence and something to feel good about of this growing game. So they formed a football club to try to raise money for the kind of the poor families on the east side of Glasgow. Kind of at the same time, a little bit prior to, on the west side of Scotland, Rangers Football Club formed. It initially didn't start out of any sort of religious denomination or anything like that, but because Celtic did form from more of an Irish Catholic perspective, then it naturally kind of gravitated to drawing support to the Protestants in Glasgow. And so they kind of then developed an association of supporting Rangers Football Club. And like these associations, I think, have lessened over the years. And I'm not saying like, oh, if you're a fan of this club, then you are A, B, and C or vice versa. But the historical associations are quite evident. So for example, those associations being over time with Celtic Football Club, it's likely then that you have Irish heritage, and that's why the Irish tricolor is so commonly waving at Celtic Park and things like that. Yeah, you're maybe more associated with the east side of Glasgow, which is where those populations kind of settled and things like that. Maybe your feelings towards the British monarchy aren't as strong as they otherwise would be, and the Protestant Reformation in Scotland was not it was violent, and there's still hard feelings about that, and that's very different from in America, where I was kind of compared to World War II, because in Europe World War II is very somber. And in America, I feel like we're kind of nostalgic about it, and we kind of pump our chest that, you know, because of Americans coming in. But, you know, World War II didn't happen here. Like, cities weren't leveled the way that they were there. So the Reformation was also very different over there, where there's still hard feelings about the Protestant Reformation. So that kind of dives into it as well. And so you have these fan associations that just kind of opposite ends of the spectrum politically, religiously, certainly national identity with chances are Celtic fans draw their national identity from Irish heritage, whereas a Rangers fan, historically, the association has been that they're, you know, British, Scottish, supportive of the monarchy, supportive of the United Kingdom across England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And yeah, the status of Northern Ireland even comes into it with republicanism or wanting that association to stay with Northern Ireland being part of the United Kingdom, or wanting, on the other side, wanting a united island of Ireland between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. So you have these feelings that have been established for decades, and they kind of bubble to the surface when these two clubs play each other. And it's unlike anything an American sport from an intensity perspective, and why a rivalry is a rivalry.
Well, in the U.S. here, we think we know rivalry, but you just gave us a little bit of context. I appreciate that, Kyle. That was fascinating. And just, just the tip of the iceberg, really, in trying to understand what we see as a football game or a soccer game on the surface. But there's a lot happening underneath. Really exciting that you're able to pull this together. Congratulations on your first go round on this class trip. And we wish you well as you sort of formulate and try to do it again. I think for these sorts of things, I think Chad's done it, and I've led students as well to different places. It's exciting. I think the second and third time that I've done certain trips with students, it gets even better because you as the instructor kind of know what's around the corner. It's sort of fun to be able to reveal to them what maybe you've already seen. So really exciting. Thanks so much for sharing this part of it with us. And we certainly wish you well in the next one.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again so much for the invite. And it's great to connect with you guys. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport Faith Life podcast, conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.